Our second reading continues a series of readings from this creative poem that's the last book in the Bible called the Revelation. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away." He who was seated on the throne said, "I am making everything new." Then he said, "Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true." He said to me, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty, I will give water without cost from the spring of the water of life. Those who are victorious will inherit all this, and I will be my God, and they will be my children. But the cowardly, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, those who practice magic arts, the idolaters, and all liars, they will be consigned to the fiery lake of burning sulfur. This is the second death." May we hear God's voice in the reading of Scripture. Let me say that I usually like the way that the lectionary readings are broken up. They usually make sense. This week, the reading stopped at verse 6. And kept us from reading verses 7 and 8. Now, I fully admit to you, I do not like verses 7 and 8, especially verse 8, and I don't quite know what to do with it, but I still want to read even things that might be confusing to us as we wrestle. Part of our work together as a congregation is to wrestle with Scripture as we hear it and try as best we can to make sense of it. So I won't deal with it a lot, but it's there, and you heard it. Now, I know I don't look a day over 35, but I'm actually 48. And that means that I came of age in the 1980s. Anyone who grew up in the 80s knows the incredible power of the great movie, The Karate Kid. Daniel moves from New Jersey, where he's a dark-haired Italian boy, to California, where all the athletic kids are blonde. In his new school, Daniel's bullied by members of the Cobra Kai Karate Club. In the midst of all these troubles and fights, Daniel's befriended by Mr. Miyagi, an unassuming gardener who breaks up one of these fights and who happens to be a master of martial arts. Daniel agrees to be mentored by the elder Miyagi so that he can learn to defend himself. But instead of giving him helpful instruction in the martial arts, which is what he wanted, Mr. Miyagi assigns to Daniel what appear to him to be meaningless tasks. He's told to paint a fence like this, and then to wax a car this way and this way. And even when he's instructed that these painting and waxing movements are to be just so, that it's very important how the movements go, he still can't understand why he's wasting all his time on these silly projects. Only much later, when these motions have become second nature to him, does it dawn on him finally that he's unwittingly been training in the martial arts all along. Now, if you haven't seen this movie, I pity you, but I don't no empathy for giving a spoiler alert because it was this movie is from 1984. Okay? Spoiler alert is that he ends up winning the martial arts championship against one of the blonde bullies, and he takes home the beautiful girl. I know that that ending surprises you. Now, this same thing that happens, sort of learning something when you don't even know you're learning it, this goes on all the time. For those of us who have engaged in the habits of worship, by participating in the rhythms of worship, you know already much more than you think you know. You are developing certain skills and you're not even aware of it. These practices of worship, singing, praying, caring for one another, greeting one another, these shape us, form our lives in deep ways, and they kind of sneak up on you over the course of time. We exercise our imaginative muscles every time we worship. So if you want to have the skill, the ability to imagine all the vast different kinds of creatures in their interconnected smallness before the majesty and the glory of God, that's Psalm 148. If you want to be able to do that, you'll need to develop the skills that come out of habits of worship. If you want to be able to imagine the full flourishing of all the earth and everything in it, a new creation, that's Revelation 21. You'll need to learn the arts and skills that grow out of habits of worship. Like all other kinds of exercise, the routines and the rhythms of worship can enable us to imagine new possibilities in almost every area of our lives. God's grace to us is breathtakingly free, but that free grace comes to us and fuels us and energizes us for prayer and work. It flips a switch, it turns us on, it makes us active participants with God in what God's doing. Psalm 148 teaches us that the practice of worship levels all the differences between all the different kinds of creatures. Did you notice in Psalm 148, it's almost like the psalmist is trying to name every category of thing you could imagine, right? Try to come up with something that doesn't fit on that list. He says, no, I've created this panorama. All the high and low and here and there and heavens and seas and big people and small people. It's all there. All creatures together, their differences don't really matter. They're all part of one big choir in their smallness, right, as creatures, magnifying and glorifying the majesty of God. So one of the goals of our worship should be to cultivate a sense of oneness with all things, a sense of being webbed together, integrated together with all other creatures, even if they're bigger than you or smaller than you or stranger looking than you. Worship is meant to create in us a sense of solidarity with all our human brothers and sisters and should teach us to be attentive to and wary of anyone who makes a big deal of the differences between human beings. Yes, there are differences. So worship ought to help you notice how silly it is for human beings to compare themselves with one another. Worship ought to teach us how silly it is for any human creature to see themselves as more important or more powerful than some other human creature. All of us have witnessed snobs, cliques, people who have an exaggerated sense of their own status. To be a snob is not difficult. It just means that you have to pick out some tiny, insignificant difference. It might have to do with appearance, with physical appearance, or with clothing, style, with family connections, who you belong to, with your educational achievements, or where you've traveled, or the kind of house you live in, or how many possessions you have. So to be a snob, just pick out one of those small differences between you and others, and then blow it up wildly out of proportion as a way of concealing your own fundamental smallness and humility as one of God's creatures. You know people who do this. I know people who do this. You and I have probably done this. But getting better at worshiping God helps us laugh at the silliness and the pretensions of snobs and showboats, and hopefully will keep us from that kind of behavior ourselves. The visionary poem called The Revelation asks us to imagine this beautiful but still stale, creaky world around us giving way, giving birth to something else, something new. To live with faith is to learn to trust God's promises that God will renew heaven and earth, everything there is. The emphasis in the poem is not on the destruction of the earth. Some people like that part. They want everything to just, the whole house to just burn down. That's not the point of the poem. The emphasis is on God's promise to renew everything. And in that renewal, the key feature will be the arrival of God's presence in the midst of creation. The city of Jerusalem descends towards the earth as a bride beautifully adorned, as a sign of God's promises to make all things new. This is important for the way we worship because it means that the God we worship is no distant overlord, no far away or absent controlling force. This is the God of Jesus Christ, who takes delight in dwelling among us small creatures. And we are to look forward in hope to this arrival, a time when God will wipe away every tear from our eyes, a life without death or mourning or crying or pain, a life in which Christ's resurrection glory is shared with us and with all of created reality. Now that's the vision of the poem. I don't pretend that it's obviously true or that it's easy to believe. To be honest, this kind of hope requires the alignment of our best energies so that our whole lives become a form of work and prayer aimed at the future realization of this hope. Perhaps that's why there's a long list of unfaithful behaviors at the end there in verse 8 that might lead one to miss all this exciting newness. To read this poem and to dream of God-authored newness is to embrace a reality that's not simply right in front of you right now. Now let me take a few minutes as I end here to lay out what it looks like when ordinary people like us allow our imaginations to be sharpened by the exercise of regular habits of worship. You become a more creative, more thoughtful, or more flexible, a more innovative person who can react with the give and take of the world around you. Some of you met Charles and Melissa Johnson when they were here. They are mission workers serving in a rural area of Zambia. They were here 2 summers ago to share with us about their work. And their most recent newsletter is out in the narthex if you want to catch up with what they're doing. Their ministry in rural Zambia has been creative from the very start. They serve in a seminary there that trains Presbyterian pastors to lead congregations. And there's not nearly enough Presbyterian pastors or pastors in general in Zambia. But at the same time, they train these pastors to be productive farmers so that they can earn a living and serve the communities in which they live. Their most recent projects involve the building of a large agricultural facility so that the farmers can store their soybean crops. Most Zambian farmers have no storage, which means in practice that they're always forced to sell their beans at harvest time when the price is low. But now with this new facility, they'll be able to store their beans and sell when the price is higher. Another project they've just completed is a rural health clinic, complete with a new cervical cancer screening program for women. And this is a big deal in rural Zambia. They can save many women's lives by early detection and screening for cervical cancer. That last rural health clinic was made possible by an award they received from the Presbyterian Women Thank Offering Grant, which we receive every year, which we just received last weekend. So I want you to see what a huge difference your giving makes and our Presbyterian women make. More than that, part of our congregation's mission giving goes to the work that the Johnsons are doing in Zambia. The work they're doing is creative, imaginative work. And to be honest, I want to commend all of you for your ongoing generosity to that ministry. Of course, right here we have plenty of our own challenges, but we're not so absorbed in our own challenges that we can't support our friends doing good work in other places. That takes imagination. So good job. Now turn from Zambia to a little plot of land on a corner just behind us on Eddy. A year or so ago, a group of you built some raised garden beds over there on that corner in the hopes that it could go from sort of unused patch of weeds to some productive garden beds, and it has. And now our friends at the Nazarene Church in the community noticed that we had those garden beds, and they started a conversation with us about partnering with them in a new ministry they're undertaking, which helps, part of the Next Steps program, with helps people without work start with small steps, learning how to care for a garden and do the things it takes to raise food, and they get paid for it. When they started that conversation, I took the question to our session. Our session agreed that this would be a great opportunity to collaborate with another congregation in our community. So think about this: to put an unused lot to work, to build gardens where there were only weeds, to partner in friendship with another congregation. All these things require agility, flexibility, creativity, the ability to imagine something new that didn't exist before. along these lines, I could point to the significance of these Sunday serve work days. These days symbolize in a rich way something we care deeply about. As a congregation, our mission is that God's amazing, generous love in Jesus Christ ought to flow through us and benefit our neighbors and our wider community. And we do lots of stuff throughout the year that I hope conveys that sense of mission, but nothing does it in as pointed and intense a way as those work days. So I hope that you'll join us on that day. We just recognized a few moments ago some of our students transitioning, third grade and on, and high school seniors and on. All of you young people, no matter your age, will have to imagine your own future over against the expectations of your parents, the expectations of your peer group and your wider media culture. Maybe that means that you have to work hard to carve out the life that's right for you and your own sense of what God's calling you to do and be. Maybe for you that means life in a big city, and maybe it doesn't. Maybe it means college, and maybe it means learning a trade. Maybe it means focusing on life outside of career and paid work. Maybe it includes marriage and family, and maybe it doesn't. Maybe it involves valuing simplicity rather than accumulation and possessions. But no matter what choices you make, young people, all these choices will take imagination on your part. Now move from our young people to all of us who live here in Bourbon County. All of us need to be able to imagine new possibilities and need to be able to work for a shared future that isn't right in front of us. We have to build it. We have to be able to get some critical distance from what's right in front of us so that we can imagine a different way of being together that's healthy. Can we imagine small communities like ours with healthy citizens, with access to good health care, with good paying jobs for everyone? Can we imagine a world where smaller rural places flourish alongside our larger cities in healthy regional economic communities? I want to be able to imagine that, but it will take some work because it's not right here in front of us. We need imagination in all kinds of ways. We need it in our public lives. Can we imagine a world without school shootings? What prayers and work are you willing to put with that imagination? Can we imagine a new kind of politics where the largest corporations, their lobbying groups, don't dominate our public policy debates? We need imagination on a smaller scale in our personal lives. Can we imagine how to use social media as a digital expression of our own kindness, compassion, curiosity, and neighborliness? If you're retired or if you're close to retirement, can you imagine a satisfying, productive, joyful life of serving others outside the framework of a paid career? That takes work. If you're dealing with the pain of difficult or estranged relationships with someone you care about, can you imagine a softening of heart on both sides, yours and theirs? Can you imagine peacemaking conversations that will be required if there's any hope of reconciliation and forgiveness and renewal? If you've lost a loved one, as I know many of you have, can you imagine the new normal that will involve, yes, of course, grief and loss, but also its interplay with new forms of joy and friendship? Friends, when we commit ourselves to these ancient rituals like singing, praying, reading scripture, caring for others, giving and sharing, we're not guilty of engaging in boring routines, nor are we guilty of trying to escape from the urgent issues of our day. When we center our lives by these old symbols like crucifixion and resurrection, by hope for a new future, we're not avoiding the difficult work of making the world a better place. Rather, we're undergoing the training of our imaginative muscles. We're learning to see that the world doesn't have to be the way it is. It can change, and it can be changed by ordinary people like us who have begun to see ourselves as God's friends and partners in God's work of making the world new.